This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Willie French Lowry was an ambassador of pride and peace for the Lumbee Indians of North Carolina. His music honored that tribal heritage and educated young Lumbee about their culture.
Proud to be Lumbee Indian, yes I am. When I grow up into this world, I'm gonna be just what I am.
Willie French Lowry is best known for penning anthems like Proud to be Lumbee and writing original songs for the outdoor drama Strike at the Wind, which celebrates the life of a Lumbee cultural hero. His music and activism addressed important social issues like federal recognition of his tribe and racism in his native Robeson County. But Willie had a long career in music before he became the voice of a community. He started out playing rock in the 1960s and 70s, toured with the Allman Brothers, and wrote tunes that earned him the respect and attention of stars like Paul McCartney. Willie French Lowry passed away in May at the age of 67. On today's show, we're going to honor the premier troubadour of the Lumbee tribe, starting with the first chapter of his music career. Joining me today is musician Mike Taylor. He wrote an extensive profile of Willie for Southern Cultures magazine a couple of years ago. Welcome back to the show, Mike. Good to have you here.
Thanks so much for having me.
Also with us, Brendan Greaves. He's a folklorist and co-founder of North Carolina record label Paradise of Bachelors. The label recently reissued one of Willie French Lowry's albums called Plant and Sea, originally released in 1969. Hello, Brendan.
Hi, Frank. Thank you for having me.
Also pleased to welcome in the studio the band Darkwater Rising in the studio. They are gearing up to play a concert in honor of Willie French Lowry this weekend in Maxton, North Carolina. The band is Charlie Lowry on acoustic guitar, Aaron Locklear on keyboard and bass, and Shay Jones, is on the drums. Welcome to all of you. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
I'm honored to be here.
Mike, let me start with you. Willie French Lowry, shining star of local music, source of pride for North Carolina's Lumbee, but he didn't achieve much commercial success as a recording artist on the national stage. How did he first come to your attention?
I was first put in touch with him by a professor at UNC named Bill Ferris, who teaches a course on Southern music. And he pointed me in Willie's direction. He thought that Willie would be someone I would like to meet. And so I spent several hours with Willie over the course of maybe a week or two, recording what he could remember about his life.
What did you learn about those early years for him?
What I found really interesting among many things that Willie told me is that he really came up as a musician through a sort of informal apprenticeship that we don't see the likes of too much now. He played in what he called the Hoochie Coochie shows, which I understood to mean sort of circus, maybe.
Yeah, the carnivals, right? Traveling shows and kind of the peep shows, right?
Yeah, and he did that, but he also played gospel music in church, and I think he did what he could to get by and to further his musical technique.
Brendan, tell me about the band Plant and Sea. Willie fronted that band at the start of his music career in the 60s. Is that right?
That's right. Plant and Sea was formed in the late 60s, and it was a band local to Robeson County and Fayetteville, North Carolina. What was really fascinating for me about this band, first hearing about it, is that it was an interracial and integrated band in the South in the late 60s. Willie, of course, was a Lumbee, American Indian frontman and principal songwriter and singer and guitarist. And the drummer, who was incredible, was a man named Forrest Fulford, who was African-American. Carol Fitzgerald was a vocalist and additional songwriter in the band. She was of Scotch-Irish ancestry. And Ron Seeger was the bass player who had Latino roots. So they really struggled because of their mixed identity at the time. And that was a story I was interested in telling, in addition to being just interested in their music, which is phenomenal.
Of course, they would have to know that. Was it a political statement? Is that why they were the band and made up that way?
My impression is that no, it wasn't, whereas that may have been a kind of marketing ploy for a few other bands at the time. I think in Willie's case, it was really more just a product of coming from where he came from. Robeson County is almost equally tri-racial county, which is pretty fascinating and rare. And so I think he was just used to being around different kinds of people and playing music with different kinds of people. So it was a sort of natural gathering of mutual musical interests, irrespective of cultural difference.
Tell us about Plant and Sea's 1969 album that you're going to reissue. Why reissue that? What was on that album?
Well, it's interesting. That record has a certain canonical status to a very small select group of record heads, folks who collect psychedelic rock music from that era, the late 60s, early 70s, have a real respect for the Plant and Sea self-titled record, largely to do with its scarcity as well as its quality. It was originally released on White Whale Records, which was the label of the Turtles, the Rockets, who went on to become a Crazy Horse, Neil Young's band.
Yeah.
Warren Zevon was a staff songwriter for them, and they were based in L.A. Mm-hmm. So Plant and Sea actually went out to L.A. to work with the label, promptly had all their gear stolen, had to get more gear, went back to New York to record the album, and then kind of came back home to North Carolina. And the album didn't get very far. White Whale dissolved shortly after releasing it, and they didn't really have the funds or wherewithal to market or distribute it appropriately.
I want to play one clip from that album. This is from the song Flat on My Face.
I gotta leave her alone. Ha! She come home when she wants to. Just does it just for spite. Put yourself in my place. You're an alien flat on my face. Like a rug on the floor. Ha! I've been the way many times before. I got the gift of having compromise. You can realize that there's truth in all the lies.
There's a clip from Flat on My Face from Plant and Sea's 1969 album that's about to be reissued on Paradise of Bachelors. Mike Taylor, you're a musician. What do you hear in that music? Is there something that distinguished that from other music that was happening at the time?
Well, talking to Willie and learning about his early musical upbringing, what really strikes me, especially even now, thinking about it, is that he took all of these disparate genres, which we all know have always kind of mixed anyways, but he took gospel, rhythm and blues, funk, country, and he turned them in the same way that a group like the band maybe did, into this perfect mixture. And, you know, he learned about those different kinds of music not from listening to records of them, but from actually playing that music. He played in the church. He played at, you know, greasy R&B spots. So,
well, we have musicians here who grew up listening to him and knew him. Darkwater Rising is with us. Shay Jones, a recent addition to the band, and I understand that you knew Willie French Lowry very well personally. What was he like?
He was a big mentor of mine. when I was like 7 years old, first time I met Willie on stage and with my parents and at our Performing Arts Center at UNCP. And he was dressed up in white with his big bell bottoms, big butterfly collar, and putting on a show. And I asked my mom, "Mom, is that Wayne Newton?" You know, and it was. But that was my first encounter. So, years later, out of high school and through functions at schools, he would come. Just a big mentor, and his musicianship was amazing. Writing was amazing. And, of course, Proud to Be Lumbee was the staple anthem back then for us, singing it. And personally playing with him, got to encounter him in 1999 with some shows. And then from 2000-2006, we did a lot of shows throughout the Carolinas. And all my pride and joy was probably First Americans Festival in Washington, D.C. on the Mall. We did like a 4-day festival with him, and it was amazing. The cultures, getting to meet other band members, and just relating to Willie, how people just encountered him, they were amazed by him and his writing, and to me, he's the big mentor and a staple in our community and a pillar forever.
Well, Charlie, can you talk about his Lumbee heritage and how you think that influenced him as a musician, and maybe how it influenced you?
Yeah, so as Shay mentioned, you know, Proud to Be a Lumbee Indian as an anthem for, you know, not only kids but adults as well, to instill that pride and, you know, to share that message that you can be anything you want to be. You know, coming from Robeson County, it's a place that, you know, it's the people are very oppressed. So when you have a voice that was as strong as his, you know, shining above everything else to say, you know, rise out of this. You can do anything you want to if you put your mind to it. You know, there's not too many people sharing that message around home. But for him to stand out and, you know, it instills a lot of pride.
I know you're going to do a tribute concert to Willie French Lowry in concert tomorrow. I wonder if you'd do a preview right now and play a song for us.
All right. This is actually a Dark Water Rising original that we've been working on. It's called My Fun. Crazy when she thought I knew it all, baby. Then when things got shaky, I gave away the best part of me.
Dark Water Rising on the State of Things. We are honoring Lumbee Indian musician Willie French Lowry on the show today. The band is Charlie Lowry, Shay Jones, and Aaron Locklear. I'm also joined by musician Mike Taylor of His Golden Messenger and Brendan Greaves, co-founder of Paradise of Bachelors Records. That label has reissued the 1969 album called Plant and Sea, featuring the vocals of Willie French Lowry. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow, paying tribute today to Willie French Lowry, a singer, a songwriter, and a troubadour in many ways, an ambassador of music and culture for the Lumbee Indians and for all of us. And in the studio is Mike Taylor. He wrote an extensive profile of Willie for Southern Cultures magazine a couple of years ago. Brendan Greaves is with us, a folklorist and co-founder of North Carolina record label Paradise of Bachelors. That label recently reissued one of Willie French Lowry's albums, Plant and Sea. It was originally released in 1969. Dark Water Rising is in the studio as well. It is a band that's playing tribute concert to Willie in Maxton, North Carolina tomorrow. They are here today, Charlie Lowry on acoustic guitar, Aaron Locklear on the keyboard and bass, and Shay Jones on the drums. You know, we were talking about that album and the group Plant and Sea, Brendan, and that album that was released in 1969, and I want to play another clip from that right now. This one's called Mrs. Tree.
Mrs.
Mrs. Tree, Brendan, kind of got an ecological message. Was Willie French Lowry working as a social activist early in his career, do you think?
I think that there are probably hints that he was, and that song is interesting because it has perhaps a kind of ecological implication, as well as just being a fairly straightforward late 60s love song. What's compelling about his career is that he started in this rock and roll and psych rock mold, and fame eluded him for reasons beyond his control, despite an immense talent and presence. And then he shifted gears and became an artist who was interested in articulating issues of American Indian identity and culture. And for me, that's really powerful that his career pursued these kind of dual directions.
Well, I want to get to the activist career, but Brendan, any guesses about why this much a man with this much talent wasn't more commercially successful early on?
Well, I think Willie had very bittersweet memories of his music career in the 60s and 70s. I think a lot of his trouble was really the problem of the record labels and management with which he was dealing. It was kind of a tumultuous time in the music industry. White Whale, the label that released the Plant and Sea album, folded shortly thereafter and couldn't distribute it properly. He had a hit with a song called Streets of Gold off of his next record, which was entitled Overdose, recorded by his band at that point called Lumbee, which was essentially a renamed version of Plant and Sea, named after his tribe and his people. But that radio hit didn't translate into album sales, and again, it was a tiny label called Radnor, based out of Philadelphia. And I think he did feel mismanaged and poorly handled, and yet has these he had these very, very strong and positive memories about playing with the Allman Brothers, about playing with those bands and writing that music. So I think there were positive and negative memories.
Mike, when you talked to him, did he tell you about the turn? Was there a turning point that changed his career from a pop musician to someone who was more socially active, more socially conscious?
I got the sense that having traveled all of these different routes towards finding the big success that was promised him by White Whale and various other managers and record labels, he sort of started to look inwards and think about what it was that he needed to get from his music. This was the sense that I got. It wasn't articulated exactly like that, but I got the sense that, you know, he did talk often about Robeson County being a place of refuge for him and the place to which he would return after going out to California or New York and having issues with business dealings, and he would always come back to North Carolina to kind of recharge. And I think that his work becoming more Lumbee-centric was just the next step in that process.
Willie suffered from Parkinson's disease and was affected, I think, his memory by the time you talked to him to try to get the story. Was it difficult for him to pull the story out?
There were some times when we both had to sort of go back and forth a little bit to try and confirm certain details. But generally, he sort of had it. He had all the big stuff there, and he had a lot of the details.
Brendan, how is his musicianship? How did that hold up as the Parkinson's advanced?
One thing that I found very striking about Willie in the time that I knew him, just in the past few years, was that he would have issues with Parkinson's as far as memory and as well as motor control. But as soon as he picked up a guitar, it was a kind of focusing element for him, and he was able to concentrate and play and sing beautifully. So that was magical to see happen again and again. When he got frustrated in my conversations with him, he would just pick up the guitar, and then things would begin to focus.
As you say, the band Dark Water Rising is in our studio today, getting ready to play a tribute concert, and I wonder if I can ask you all to play another song right now.
As I recall the times that we set out on a Sunday afternoon, we set out on the porch where it was cool. Someone would turn the radio on, I'd hear the preacher say, "Let us meet where the rivers run cold. Let us meet where the rivers run cold. All God's children, we're gonna walk the streets of gold. They say that forever. Still hear Mama say, "Come in and wash your hands. Get to the table, supper's almost done." Someone would ask the blessing, blessing everyone. Let us meet where the rivers run cold. Let us meet.
Dark Water Rising is here in the studio with a song called Let Us Meet Where the Rivers Run Cold, a song that you played at Willie French Lowry's funeral, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where did you learn that song?
From a recording, actually. It was sent to me a couple of days before the service, so I had never heard it, you know, prior to that, and it was an honor to be able to perform it for him.
Is that a song that was pretty important to Willie?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, you know, I want to ask you, Shay Jones, who's doing percussion for this group, whether or not that influenced your decision at all, just knowing Willie and growing up listening to his music, to become a musician.
Yes, it was. I took a hiatus from music, actually, about 6-7 years, right out of high school. You know, I was in bands, garage bands, what have you. Went to college, got a career started. And Willie would always go through circles. He would network everybody. He would find people to do just little tidbits of whatever. He just had that knack and ear. So I would get calls through my mom, actually. I said, "When did Ivory call you?" I said, "What?" You know, to do some just little tidbits in the studio. So.
Just to hear your name called and know that you were associated with that.
Yeah, that's a blessing in itself. And so in 99, the encounter happened with Willie and in his studio in Lumberton. He had a Sound Station, was named the studio he had, and he would do all genres of music. He did jingles from people came in, and it was amazing just to listen to little things he would do and the dynamics of it. So I really learned dynamics from Willie, and it's just a blessing just throughout the years I had to encounter him and just to learn from him. And that's when really the mentorship came in from 2000, 2006. And it's a good memory.
Brendan Greaves, I think there's a funny story about a song called Henrietta that Willie did. Melinda Maynor Lowry is a professor at UNC and also Willie's widow, and that turns out to be one of her favorite songs, Henrietta, although we'll notice that Melinda is not Henrietta. That is not her name.
No, it's not, but it is a beautiful song, and I know that Melinda is really partial to it. That was one of the sides of a 45 that White Whale released from the Plant and Sea album, and it did get some radio play, particularly in California markets, but unfortunately that didn't translate into anything further for the band, so they jumped ship and moved back home and became affiliated with Radnor Records in Philadelphia. But it's a beautiful song. I think it has a real kind of ache and yearning to it.
What's his legacy? What are we going to remember, and what do we take from Willie French Lowry?
Well, I think his legacy is really at that juncture, musically speaking, at least, when he reinvented himself as someone who used his artistry and his gift to address issues central to his community and to his culture. And I think that there's a powerful lesson in viewing the arc of his career from hustling for fame as a rock and pop musician that did not come to be for various reasons, political, I think, probably racial and cultural, and certainly financial and industry-based. But he was able to direct his art elsewhere and influence an entire generation or more, not just of Lumbee people, but music lovers around the state and around the world.
Mike, what do you think?
I would agree with Brendan completely. I think that the breadth of what he did musically and politically is hard to get your arms all the way around. And another thing that I want to underscore is just like what an absolute master of a singer and guitar player he was. I mean, his body of work, Proud to Be a Lumbee, Strike at the Wind, the Plant and Sea, Lumbee Records, all of that stuff would be great by anyone, but the fact that like he has the perfect voice is, you know, it's a voice that male vocalists want. It's that pure voice with this sort of burr around the edges that you can't force. You just, some people have it. And he was an incredible guitar player and an incredible musical thinker. There are not very many people like that in the world.
Well, one way to express the legacy of any musician is to hear how it translates in the sound of those who followed. So we're going to listen to some music by Darkwater Rising, who's here. They're going to pay tribute tomorrow. But I want to thank all of my guests for being on the program today. Mike Taylor, also known as MC Taylor, known as His Golden Messenger. Brendan Greaves, a folklorist and co-founder of the record label Paradise of Bachelors, reissued the 1969 album Plant and Sea, featuring Willie Lowry. Visit paradiseofbachelors.com for more information. Darkwater Rising, Aaron Locklear, Shea Jones, and Charlie Lowry. Tomorrow the band is going to continue their tribute to Willie French Lowry at a concert called Red, White, and Boom. Show starts at 8 o'clock. Locklear's Vineyard and Winery, Maxton, North Carolina. Visit darkwaterrising.net for more information. Band's going to play us out in just a second, but first let me say this is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow. Once again, Darkwater Rising.
Hometown hero, lost a life today. From a lover's arms, carried on.